Here is Ruth Amann, AMMANN, The Child, Sand Play, 12 September 1992, Tape 2 of 4.
And poor veterans that have what they call post-traumatic stress disorder have discovered that the sand tray is very useful in helping to treat for traumatic nightmares, recurrent nightmares. And I wondered if you could offer anything from your own experience about working with nightmares and helping with those.
Mm-hmm. I think this is an important question because it points to something. Fantasies and fears, nightmares, as long as they are inside, they are very scary, you know this, frightening a lot. If we can bring them out, if we can give a shape, a form to them, then it is much better. It's all, if you are very angry with someone and you write a letter to this person, you don't have to send the letter, but if it is done in the letter, you feel relieved and it's much better. The same takes place in the sand tray. If you can bring it out, if you can look at it, then you can step back also. It is here and you can step and look and say, aha, so it is. As long as you have something inside, it is huge, scaring, dark. That's an experience you all know probably. And I think this is the important and valuable thing about the sand, that you do it, you bring it out, you form it, and the analyst can see it. Because we talked in the pause about this, to tell a dream to your analyst so that your analyst can really understand what your dream was like and feel the emotion, it's very difficult, very difficult. And if you give your dream in a written piece of paper, it's nearly impossible to get the essence of your dream. Sometimes my analysts come and give me, here are a bunch of dreams. It's okay, but you don't feel it. You don't feel the emotion. You don't see it. It's much easier to see in the sand tray for me, because then my own projection is not so much working. If, for instance, someone says it was horrible, it was demonic, so your own fantasy starts to work as an analyst. But then you see in the sand tray, he would say, it was horrible, demonic, and it is a little mouse. Then you will be surprised, and you think, ah, so it is. You imagine the monster. And this is the great danger. Very often we project too much. But here in the sand tray, we see what is there, what the monster is like. And recently I had a case in my practice. It was so interesting. Somebody was talking about nightmares coming back and back and back in her childhood. And then she formed a kind of black, huge monster in the sand tray. And she took a kind of bottle and made a dress of black paper around it, something like this. And then I looked at this and I said, we were laughing and joking a little bit, and I said, but the monster is an empty bottle. And she said, that's just what it was. The empty bottle was very important for her. So we have to observe. We have to watch this, and I think that's extremely interesting in this work. And interesting is also to observe the people working in sand. Then you see, first of all, you see how they use their hands. You see the breath going, the heart beating, you see tears coming up, you You see the emotion, everything is very visible. And you can also experience how people deal with awkward or difficult situations. Let's say they want to have a princess, a beautiful princess like this with a red dress and a white veil. I don't have such a princess. Now what happens? Some neurotic people will say, in this case no princess. You know this. Mm-mm. Others will say, we could do one. I could make my own princess. And a third one would say, let's see if you have something different. And in this moment already starts the process of transformation inside. And she or he will look for another figure. It's very important. Do you know Levi Strauss? Mm-hmm. Levi Strauss, in his book about what is it in English? What could it be? The wild thinking, is it perhaps something like this? Or the la pensée sauvage, where he talks about two ways of handling, of creating something. It's interesting. He says, some people have the idea to build a house, and they say, I need this and this and this and this. If they cannot get this, they will abandon the idea and say, I don't want to build a house in this case, or can't do it. Others will say, I have this, and I have this, and I have this, and what am I going to do with this? And so the house comes out of this what we have. This is very much true also for Santley. We have to use reality. We have to deal with reality. We have to do something out of what is available. And so it is in life. We have to deal with the reality, isn't it? And the neurotic way of living is always to want something else, something different. To look for the red princess if there is a blue one. And if there is a blue one, you want the red one, and so on. So, I think that's an important thing, yes? Yeah, it is so, because it depends. For instance, in my book, I described the case of a very depressive woman. And during her deep depression, she wouldn't hear me. She did not hear what I said. I could mention something, but she would not pay attention to it. Perhaps something she did perhaps keep it somewhere in her. But it depends very much of the state. If people are very depressed and very much in her complexes, I can't do it. But if I see somebody can see it, I would say, but perhaps you have a look at this. For instance, it's very important if you have a sand tray that looks more or less sad and depressed, and you see a little place of hope somewhere, then I would just say, we have also this here. Because a sand tray is a very complex thing. I have never seen a completely negative sand tray. Never. So somewhere is always something light. Also the opposite is true. Then I would perhaps say, yeah, and what about this spider here? Or just mention I have seen it, and then it starts to work inside. We don't have to interpret things. People are very intelligent. They know it. Yeah? Yeah?
mentioned in your book the issues of transference and countertransference, and you said that it was too big a topic to go into at that particular time for that particular book. Would you comment a bit on that now?
Yes. The transference in verbal analysis is a very direct one. And what you would feel as an analyst very often is that what you feel best probably is the sucking of energy from the analysand. Very often they try to take your energy out, so, or they project beautiful things on you and so on. In the Sante, it is a bit different. Of course, you are around as an analyst, and you are perhaps protecting and knowing and the midwife and so on. But it is goes much more through the sand. It is kind of broken transference. And it is easier for an analysand to put a witch in the sand and then think, aha, that's you. She can even tell me this. It's easier so. And you will feel it, you will see it as an analyst. It's not so easy to tell my analyst, I see you as a witch. It's not so easy. But here it is somewhere, and then you can also see in which relation this witch stands to other things. You see this very often because, let's say, you are the analysand and you do something. I sit somewhere here. Then figures will perhaps look at me or will come over here. So this is sometimes very interesting to see what is facing me, my position. So I will know, so it is. Some people will direct the whole sand picture towards me, to the analyst. Turn away from themselves. So all the figures are looking, facing the analyst. That's also interesting. They are working for me, not for themselves. So all this is to be noticed. But I feel the sand play is not sucking. In the sand play, analysands do not suck so much of our energy. One of my colleagues, Dr. Adolf Guggenbühl, he's an old analyst, very experienced. He said once, we analysts, we are perverse vampires. And we all said, what is this? And he said, we are not sucking blood, but the analysands suck out our blood. And then I thought a lot about this, what he said, and it is true sometimes. But in sand play, I feel it's a bit different because the work, working, the creative work, it's a very creative work we are doing in the sand play, is giving blood, producing blood. So the analysand can help himself through the creative work in the sand play and through the joy. Sand play is also joyful. And he has... He doesn't need to suck out my blood. He can do it himself. I think we are here now touching a very important point because sand play and all the creative work we are doing in analysis are tremendously important for people with a damaged immunity system. I have patients with leukemia and patients, they are HIV positive. What would you say? Say H? Yeah. Positive. As long as they do a lot of creative work in sand or with painting or with their hand, they are more or less stable. As soon they neglect it, the leukemia, the white things will go up, and in the HIV positive, it will go worse. I think that's enormously interesting. What is your experience? Perhaps we can talk about this later. Do we have more questions?
A clarification.
Could you get up, please?
Did you say that you always stand in the same place?
No, I do
but
not.
But you said it was, sometimes it all faces you.
Yeah, well, look, a room has a certain space. And if the Sante stands here, and perhaps the analysand is working there, so I sit somewhere here. So that I can observe, I have a kind of bar chair, you know, higher up, and then I can see what's going on. I sketch all this. So I am usually a little bit aside or opposite the other one. I am so much used to see all the pictures upside down now. So that's why. I do not stand behind, because this doesn't feel comfortable for the analysand. And I would, I wouldn't see. I want to observe. Hmm? Yeah.
When you talk about sketching while you're watching, do you have, regarding the issue of transference and countertransference, do you, sometimes in sketching it's easy to be so right-brained with what's happening that sort of lose a little consciousness, and for me anyway, and so. Is there sort of a danger in that? How does one both be conscious and unconscious while sketching and observing what's happening?
And danger in which way?
Well, so that if the sand tray, like if what is in the sand tray is sort of the third thing, and there is some, you know, there's the fear or the demonic or the there, in the process of sketching, does it also make you open to what is in the...
Perhaps I can say this. We have normally 50 or 60 minutes for a sand picture. So the sketching time takes only, let's say, 5-10 minutes. That's a thing I do. And I do it for myself, because what I have sketched, I have seen it. And I remember it very well. I have observed, and I can do it, and I like doing it. And I think it's relaxing very much. I feel much less stressed during the sand play hours than during the verbal analysis, because, as you said, the brain is working with both sides. And I sketch, this goes more to my right hemisphere, and I think a little bit, and then I feel, and I sense, and all this. Everything is used. I feel more complete in this. Mm. Is this an answer?
Yeah.
Yeah?
You mentioned using the tray as a test. Could you say anything about that?
What would you like to know?
In the sense of, would you use it diagnostically or...
Yes.
How?
Yes. Other people are using Rorschach test or whatsoever. I don't know what test you are using here. I do not like this, because usually the situation for the child we are testing is not very good. The child doesn't know me. And you all know that the tester is influencing the tested person very much. So I think... if I can see the child for about 5 times, a kind of trust can establish between us. And the child does not feel tested. It feels more at ease. It's an easier situation. And then I can see, because we have the initial sand tray that shows mainly a lot of things. It's like an initial dream. And then you see how this develops. And you see... where the child is going. I know much more, and it's perhaps my way to do it. Yeah, and then I look at these 5 pictures, and I sort out what I have seen. I talk also with the child, and then I ask the child, "What would you want me to tell to your father and mother, and what not?" That's very clear. I never tell anything the child doesn't want. And then we can go... sometimes I can only show the pictures to the parents and they will understand what's going on. And sometimes it comes out that the child doesn't need a therapy. The therapy is somewhere else. So I use it in this way because it's my way to do it, and I can see more out of this. I see 5 hours. And by the way, a test is very expensive. I can do as well 5 sand pictures for the same money. And I see more of the child. Yeah? So we come back.
If a child asks you to pray and with you together, how do you do it?
To play with me?
Yeah.
That I should
sand,
play?
Yeah.
In the sand?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I would do it if the child asks me. And then, but I would not interfere in my, I would wait until the child asks me, yes. Mm-hmm. It depends. I can't give you any rules, but you must feel this, is it right or not? Yeah? Yeah? Yeah?
I was curious if you would just say a little more about when you said that you wouldn't tell the parents something that a child wouldn't want you to tell. And there must be some pretty important distinctions if there's abuse or some violence or something very worrisome. I mean, how do you distinguish that with the child?
I think anything, everything a child wants to keep for himself, for herself, I do not tell the parents because it's privacy. That's a part of the healing space also. We have to protect the child's privacy. And I tell this right in the beginning to father and mother. And I say, please do not ask the child about the session. Do not do this. Do not interfere. You have to trust me or you will find another analyst. I'm very strict with this. Because the child needs this protected space. You know the famous word of Dora Kalfos, the free and the protected space. And if we cannot provide this for a child, then we better don't do it. I think that's very important. It's the same thing for adults. You would not trust me in analysis if I would go and talk to your wife. Yeah? Do we have other questions, or shall we? Okay.
I discovered when I started working with Native Americans with this sand trade that there was all kinds of considerations I hadn't even thought of, like directions and so forth, were very significant with natives. And I wonder if you've got any observations, you know, regarding cross-cultural work with the sand trade.
Do I understand you right, that you said, I did not get everything you said. Could you repeat?
Yeah. I said, when I started working with Native Americans and the sand trade, I discovered that there were a lot of considerations I hadn't even thought of, like directions, for example, played a very important part in the way things were placed in that sand trade. And I was wondering if you, through your experience, have anything to offer regarding cross-cultural work.
Yeah, that's a good question. Also for verbal analysis, we are very proud in Zurich. We have 32 nationalities in our Jung Institute, 32 different nationalities. So we have to deal with very different people. And I think what comes out of this is we always have to ask, what is important for you and how do you look at things, also in dream analysis, the left and the right side, and I think it's very, very important. We do not know if I work with a Japanese man, I have to ask him. I can tell him what I see, but he must give me an answer also. And to work with Americans is very different from the work with Italians, for instance. I work with the Italian control group, with lots of Italian students. They are completely different, and the problems are different they have. So we have so many cultures, and so we have to, yeah, it is a bit difficult. We have to ask, we have to learn, we have to look around, yes? Yeah.
One more quickie. Sometimes I have kids who will move out of the box, who will, or the tray, they will put things on the sideboard, figures, they will put things on the ground, they will line the edges with figures. Could you speak to that?
I think we will leave this question until this afternoon, because I have, in the case of the boy, this comes up. Exactly this problem comes up. Shall we now go on and look at the woman I want to show you? We go to a certain half time and then we have lunch, I think. I will give you a short anamnesis. She was, I call her Elsa. She was 45 years old when she came to see me. She came because she had depressed moods and deep depressions. And she had also a kind of grandiosity fantasies. And she suffered from this. She had a kind of... her religious life or her spiritual life, she had a need for this. But she had a very weak ego in the beginning. That's now my interpretation. So she was overwhelmed by all these unconscious ideas and fantasies and needs. So she was a victim, an easy victim for all kinds of gurus, or false gurus, I mean. And she followed this and this and this, and then she was overwhelmed by this. And then she had, on the other hand, deep depressions, because she had a very, a rather negative mother relationship. Her mother was a woman who Elsa experienced her all the time as depressed. And the woman was not only depressed, but she... What do you call this? Now I have lost the word. I will come back to it. She would turn the depression into body symptoms. She was somatizing. Okay. Very much. So sometimes the mother of Elsa was paralyzed even. She could not walk. Not walk out of the house. So Elsa had not a very, she had not a good relationship to the feminine, not to her body, not to her mother. On the other hand, she had a good relationship with her father. The father was a musician, a jazz musician. She liked him very much. He was a lively person. But he had many outdoor relationships, so he saw other women. So Elsa liked her father for his easy way of, easygoing way of being, but she hated him also because he neglected the mother. So this, you see, that's a double binding situation also. So the father and the mother, she had a brother. She never mentioned him much because he was not very important. He was much younger. She came from a middle-class family in the countryside in Switzerland. She had learned, she was a beautician. Is this the word, a beautician? But when she came to see me, she didn't work in this profession, but she was in fashion. She did. She did sell fashion. And she, at this time, she was divorced. She had no children. But she had a very strong relationship to her ex-husband. They never got really separated, the two. When she was married, she had a high life with this man because they lived in an Arabic country, had servants, a beautiful house, were rich. She had everything she wanted. And she had a kind of high life and social life and hopped around in her neighborhood, had friends there, a lover there, and so on. She was like a butterfly. And so she came into my practice also. What I saw when she came, a tiny little person, like dried out, strange, very, very slim, near to being anorectic. She was very elegantly dressed, heavy, heavy makeup, long nails, and beautiful jewelry. And she came in, and I thought, oh, and she wants to do sand play, huh? I was a bit surprised. But she had very nice and lively eyes. So from the first moment, I liked this in her. Kind of childlike, playful eyes she had. But she came and she told me her life without any emotion. Just one fact after the other, and the life was not a beautiful, it was a difficult life. So, tuck, tuck, tuck. She was kind of two-dimensional when I met her first. Two-dimensional. Do you remember when, perhaps also here, you had these paper dolls when you were children and you could hang dresses on? She was like this for me. I had always the image of these paper dolls. Two-dimensional, flat, dry. But something in her eye was alive. So I said, and you, do you really want to do sand play? She said, yes, yes. My astrologer told me I have no earth in my astrology, in my astrological chart, I must do sand play. This is something interesting, because since then I had many people without earth in the astrological chart. Perhaps sand play is healthy. So she came, and she did the following sand pictures. Can we now see the pictures? She came once a week for not quite 2 years, and you will see the first sand picture now. Is she coming here? Oh, okay. Fine. Now I ask you, what do you see and what do you feel? What is your impression? You have heard what I said, what she looked like when she came in. First of all, she took off all her rings and then she started to work with the humid, wet sand. A masculine face? You mean this one?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes?
I can't help but think of the separation from the mother you talked about, the drowning almost from the separation from the feminine aspect on the right.
The feminine... Could you explain me what you...
Imagine that those were breast forms on the right.
Aha. Uh-huh.
The personage on the left is cut off.
Ah, yes. Now you are seeing breast forms there.
It's stretching a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, I don't joke, but she did not. She said, I tell you, she said, the end of the hour she was here and she was surprised. She said, what have I done? Because she expected to do something beautiful, something aesthetical. But she did this and she was very surprised. She was shocked to see this. And what I feel was the beautiful, the wonderful thing about Elsa, she could let it be. She could say, oh, I did this. So let it be there. But she said afterwards, this is a face, she said, this also, this too, and even here we have a kind of head coming out. So it's important to know if these are breasts or heads. She said, no, these are kind of four heads coming out of the water or going down into the water. She didn't know it. I didn't know it. What do you see more in it? Just, yeah?
They're all facing, or it appears that they're all facing out, not together.
So,
from
from each other.
Yeah. Yeah. That's very clear. Yeah. Not much contact between the foreheads.
Mm-hmm. Right, between the four faces. Or between I as an observer and the faces.
Mm-hmm.
If she had long nails and jewelry and beautiful clothes, she decorated herself, but that's just really basic.
It's basic, yes. Yes, I didn't expect this. I was very surprised. It is very, very, very different from what she looked like.
It seems
random. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's fragmented. It's true. It's a kind of split here, too.
The fourth head is, or the one head is more than a head, also. It's as if there's some, if I'm seeing it, that way it looks like there's some body or some long shape connected that also goes around.
Yeah, you mean this one? Kind of, it's like a part of a body, yeah?
In my corner, it's like, my impression is of a bird, breast and wings.
Pardon?
In the right-hand corner, my impression of that image is a bird, breast and wings.
This here?
Underneath, yeah.
Yeah, could also be something like this. Yeah? What do you?
I'm just wondering if something there might have been affected by the Middle Eastern cultures in which she had spent time. Do you think that might
Why do you think?
There's something in the quality of the powerful figures arising out of the sand and the old cultures and the kind of static beauty of that upper right-hand form that seems very North African somehow.
She had been in Oman. It was a bit different, but it could be. Why not? I mean, it's very possible. It could be. Yeah. Yeah. What would you say? That's the initial picture. Would you feel comfortable with it, or would you be scared? What do you expect now? She was divorced already. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. She must speak louder.
I have a sense that she had no sense of who she really was. There were all these major structures, but she didn't really, couldn't seem to define any of them, really. That's what keeps on
mm-hmm.
being.
So a kind of dissociation.
Yeah. That's what it looks like to me.
Mm-hmm. Fragmentation. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It feels very powerful, like hard and almost cold. I just get a sense of like almost like there's four masks sitting there.
Does this go into the direction of non-human?
Mm-hmm. Or? Yeah, it's almost primitive.
Primitive?
Because that looks almost like a probing face, and then
mm-hmm. Very archaic. Archaic.
You made me think of Easter Island. You know,
yeah, of these archetypal figures. Yes, what did you want to say?
I would wonder about the three separations of the body, mind, and the spirit rising out in an archetypal form, out of the unconscious.
Yeah. I just let the ideas now go because I think it's interesting to see what's coming out of all this. Yeah, Maria?
There is no protection. It doesn't seem protected. And the center is not evident.
Yeah, the center, there is this kind of split in the center. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It is very sculptural, the whole thing. Very sculptural, that's true. That's what surprised me so much. Because she had this kind of two-dimensional way of presenting herself, and now she comes with this. It's very sculptural, archaic, disc, yeah? It is true. This was my first impression too. But then I considered it could also be going down of something. I did not know. She did not know. It could be a coming up of a growing process, coming out of the water, or kind of dismemberment and going down also. We did not know this exactly. So I just kept my impression, it is a kind of dismemberment. It reminded me very much of the card, the tarot card, the tarot. Do you know this number? I think it's 13, death, where you have all these heads and feet and hands coming out of the earth. We did not know, so we just let this be. I had in my mind, could be that something is growing, could also be the opposite. So we had to wait. Yeah?
I see that basically there's a similarity between the heads on the bottom from left to right. They almost look very similar.
Mm-hmm.
Except the one on this side, I just noticed that its head is extended and almost looks like there's a flame coming out of the top.
Here?
No, the bottom one.
Then?
See at the top, it almost looks like there's a going right up. And to me, the both heads on the bottom look similar, except this one has this flame, and the other one doesn't have anything. It looks like there's water surrounding it, so it's more, it has more, I don't know how to explain it. And the other two look similar. So, I don't know, it just seems like there's a little bit more going on the left side, and the right side seems very almost tight and hard.
It's true what you say, and I feel it's very interesting to hear what you see in this picture. Everybody sees something different. No, I feel it's important because we bring in what we know about these pictures. What I felt also are these separating energies. And I thought in myself, these energies are not compatible. Can I say so? It's something going like this, it will be difficult. So in my notes I have this, that I noted, will it be a growing process? Will it go back? Or what I see are energies that go on different sides. Huh?
Was this the first session that you had with her, or just the first
Santra? It was the first Santra, it was the second session. Yes. Shall I go on? Mm-hmm. Yeah?
To me, that centerpiece looks like a vulva.
A vulva. I have heard this before, and I think it could have something in it. Others. People said it looks like the spine. It depends.
Here is Ruth Aman, The Child, Sand Play, September 12th, 1992, tape 2 of 4, side 2.
This is the border. It's the end of the tray. Can we see the next one? I tell you what she said at the end. It was again so that she was surprised. She had no conscious relationship with this picture, but she accepted it. It is kind of, the water is going around, and it is equal on both sides. This is an eye. It's a kind of animal coming out on both. Here's the other eye. She said, isn't it strange? Here I see the beak of a raven. Here I see the head of a rabbit. So she called the thing the raven rabbit.
The
raven rabbit. The hasen rabe. Rabbit raven or raven rabbit. Whatever you want. What do you think about it, or what do you see, feel?
What did the rabbit symbolize to her?
The raven and what? The rabbit. She had not a big relationship. She said rabbits are very shy, and they produce a lot of babies. They are very fertile. That's what she knew about rabbits. And the raven, for her, she said that's a masculine bird. That's what she knew, a masculine bird.
The rabbit also represents humility.
Humility? Mm-hmm. Now, we can now bring in what we know about it. I think we can, because we see right from the beginning there are two great opposites coming together. The raven and the rabbit there. A rabbit is humility, is feminine very often, fertile, near to the earth.
It's interesting that the first one is so fragmented and this one is so symmetrical and centered. This one looks like a large representation of the two smaller ones at the bottom, that essentially...
Could be so, coming together.
Did you see that any
video? No, not for the first pictures. You will see. She did. She was not interested in these figures. No.
Well, wasn't the other one was on the left is more masculine, so on the right is
like... We couldn't say this. What did you want to say?
Two different things. The rabbit and the raven also are both animals which are very connected to the upper gods. Rabbits in Japanese culture are often portrayed grinding, mixing rice, which is made for mochi for special New Year ceremonies. And in the southern hemisphere, rabbits mix elixirs for the gods. And we know ravens are, you know, important. Messengers for God. So that's a lot of upper realms. But when I look at it, I see the emergence of the reptilian coming up out of the water. To me, it's very clearly that.
You will see. We will see what's coming out. Yeah? Now we go over there.
I'm comparing this to the previous slide. It feels to me that those sort of four opposites are now sort of drawn together and then surrounded by the
We will see, yes? Yeah?
It's interesting to me that she uses the eye to mediate those two opposite tendencies, and it's just unconscious to her. So it indicates that what she does not trust what she sees, she's not able to mediate these opposites in consciousness. Mm-hmm.
Well, I just want to mention that the raven, yes, the raven is a masculine bird, lives alone. The couple needs a huge territory. They throw out the children, you know. The rabbit lives in a collective. Huh? There are lots of rabbits together. It's more to the feminine, to the moon. The rabbit is shy, the raven is not. The raven is the trickster, by the way. Very important, yeah. So, yeah. But
there's also a story in this part of the country about how a raven discovered humans.
Yeah. The raven is an important creator. Yeah.
I have another, aside from the symbols of the raven and the rabbit, this
had the sense of, did she offer that as sort of a reaction to or in order to balance her previous trade? Did she say anything about the previous trade? Because it looks like a reaction to the previous trade to me, like wanting to, you know, having been so surprised by what she did the first time, somehow consciously deciding or ending up making something that's a reaction to it. Not just...
No, I don't think so. She was not conscious about it.
Uh-huh.
Because you will see now more pictures, and I tell you what, 2 years later she told me, when we looked at the pictures, only she told me then what was going on in her during this time. Mm-hmm. Yeah? Yeah?
It reminds me of the central island that often forms in the mouth of a volcano. There is a round ridge with the volcanic, the water that forms in there for a period of time. Like,
yeah.
Crater Lake.
Oh, you mean the Wizard Island?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if this...
Could be. Could be. So then the raven would be the wizard, perhaps. We will see. We go now on a little bit, I propose you. Yeah? We will see. Keep your intuitions in mind, please. It's okay. Yeah.
Don't ravens keep company with sorcerers and sorceresses?
Also. Also rabbits, a part of the witch. It has something, but I think what we can say is these are big, big opposites, strong opposites. That's, and it is in one. But they look to left and right. So let's see the next one.
Can I ask you one question?
Yes?
He had all these little objects characters available.
Yeah. Yeah, but yeah. Many of my clients never use any object. You will see in a certain moment she will use it, but not now. Now we have this. What do you see? She didn't know what it was. She said it could be now. A butterfly, what else?
Four functions.
Hmm? Four functions, could she be?
Body.
A body?
Primitive.
A primitive woman, huh? Could be?
Different version of the first tray, it is softer and more.
Could be, mm-hmm. What else?
A combination of two trays.
Could be. A mask, she said, a face. It has also something of the bones, the basin bones.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is undefinable, I think. We do not know. She said later that these first pictures for her were a fight. She felt... She was very scared and she was very surprised, and she said it was very, very difficult for me to stand these pictures, to accept it, because it was so far from her consciousness. So you see, it was a big kick to her pendulum of the transcendent function. She was very scared and she said this was difficult for me to stand, and she felt hard work. Inside.
Did she had available figurines, objects to use?
Yes.
But she chose not to.
No, she did not.
Did these trays come weekly?
Yes, each week one. Mm-hmm.
How long did she take to resist some trays?
She had always 60 minutes. But she worked, I can't remember, for perhaps 60, perhaps 45 minutes, and then we looked at it. I usually say about after 50 minutes, or the people know it, there's a clock in my room. She knew.
Was there any change in her depressed mood?
Not yet, not yet. But she came, and she came. She kept coming, and she worked, and she could accept it. This was part of what I liked very much.
Would this be an example of the regression that you spoke about going back in the first three periods, the first one of a human elements, the second one of an animal, and now she's going to something pretty abstract? Would that be the going back that you spoke about?
Look, I think that's a question I would not like to answer now, because you will answer yourself when you have seen the series of pictures. It's the same thing with Dant pictures. Each following will explain the last one. You have this also in dreams interpretation. You may say it could be so, but then the following dream gives you more explanation or more amplification for the foregoing dream. So let's see the next picture. This picture, in this hour, she was really scared. She was afraid of this animal. She said, "I don't like it. It's a gigantic insect." She didn't like it, and I think it is, the insects are very, very far from the human consciousness. I think it's more or less the opposite of everything. When I was in Chicago now, there was in the Field Museum a very interesting exposition about the backyard monsters. And looking at all these little animals, if you see them in a magnifying glass, they are monsters. Scary.
But,
yeah.
This is very spider-like.
Yeah, yeah.
And, so those arachnids are, you know, in some ways closer, I think, to crustacean.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this is still reminds me again more connected with the sequential emergence.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I wanted to see that rabbit raven figure as an emerging reptile, mm-hmm. and now here is an emerging arachnid. You know, so mm-hmm. I'm just trying out that line, I think.
Mm-hmm. Follow this line. Yeah, it's good. I think it has something spider. It could be a crab, something like this, a cancer or something. I think the most important is she was very scared, because these are figures from the unconscious, very unconscious, archaic, archetypal figures. I think that's what we could see between day and dream at night. All these kind of animals or could come up. This, or in mythology, you would have this in-between world animals or creatures or whatever. Hmm?
Do you know if that's just a piece of sand on the front part of the middle of the tray, or if the sand actually comes up and out of the tray?
You mean here?
No, the, right there.
Yeah. On the ledge.
Right where you were just pointing. In
the here?
Center. Right there.
That's the nose of the animal.
Yes. Come up out of the tray?
Yes, a little bit. It comes near her.
You know, it also looks like a mass.
Yeah.
Also.
If you view the whole thing, it's like the eyes are up, mm-hmm. with the antenna coming down. Mm-hmm. It's like the insect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's see the next one.
Does the spider sometimes too live in this case reflect the mother complex?
Yes, of course. But the mother complex we see in all these scaring things coming out of the body world, in the it is, we could also say these pictures are all coming from underneath there. So now you see. What do you see? What do you
How did she feel about this one?
Surprised. She had no relationship. She was surprised. She said, "Oh, it could be a snake head. Could be a seedling coming out of two leaves. Could be a reptile, head of a turtle." The only thing we could say, it's something coming out of something. Something grows out of something.
It's sort of like a loaf of bread, too.
Yeah, it has something in it, it's true. And
also, there's some kind of cocoon that's cracking.
It's cracky, also. Yeah.
You know, like a cocoon that's about ready to go. There's an emergence occurring.
Yeah, something's cracking. And also the coming out of the two leaves reminds us of something. And what do you think about the position of the whole thing? Now coming from the lower right to the higher left, because this is clear, this we can see. What is your impression about... We know a lot about this direction, but what about this movement? The blue part,
The bottom or the negative. To me, it's in the unconsciousness. And she has a problem under her consciousness. And the spider is getting the out of. Spider looks like moving and going out.
Tries to come out of it.
Come out. And this is, to me, a cocoon. So also, it's going out. So, she's going to express and she's going to transform to something. So it's the cocoon-like shape directed to the left side, it's a
spiritual. The spiritual side, to the left upper corner, that's what
she
is my experience.
In her daily life, she lacks such kind of spiritual thing. So
yes.
Probably she's going to that.
It's a very good remark. That's my own experience also, that the left upper corners points to the spiritual life. Yes, but
well, this is the whole notion of the cocoon, the possibility of it, now there's a sense of protection from the spider image as well. And that may be an experience of the therapeutic process.
Mm-hmm.
But now that a cocoon is also a place of safety.
I don't know why, but this gives me the feeling of a kind of an Egyptian mummy for some reason.
A mummy? One could see this here, Yes.
It's a bit of an Egyptian theme with the tray before too. If we took it as a mask.
With this, it is something in it. It's true. Yeah. But,
I'm very interested in the way she's centering the thread of progression. Now, I'm picking up the rhythm of progression. But in these ellipsoid shapes, in the second and this, more this shape centered this way. And the rest of them, the split edges that are coming down. And the water process here, more similar in the second. So I'm picking up a great deal of rhythm.
Yes, let's see the next one. We will see it proceeds. Is it Is the picture clear? I don't know. You see, now the thing is indeed coming more out. And she said now it's the head of a snake or it's a dragon. So the reptile is okay. And it is pointing clearly to the left upper corner. I think this direction from the right bottom to the left upper, I think that's the direction we see very often in persons, a bit older persons, because it's a development into a spiritual world. This other direction we see often in young persons, in children. It's going out in the world, but this is a different world, the upper left corner. Yeah?
Something that I've been seeing in the last two slides, too, is that the ground is much more carefully worked and getting higher. So I'm getting a feeling, in a sense, she's emerging out of the depths onto the land and creating a landscape for herself which can be lived in.
Let's see. Next picture, please. Now, you see, all comments are right, because now the thing is going up, it's rising, it's coming. There is a kind of snake or spiral or what you want coming up, and here on the top you have two similar little black figures. These are two Mexican figures. And I think it is very interesting. We had this movement then coming to the left upper corner, and now it's coming in this, in the vertical dimension.
Do the figures have a gender? The figures?
No. Two equal things. But I think we have here something Jung describes many times. When he talks about the number two, he very often says that the two shows that something is coming over the level of consciousness, into consciousness. So we have, like twins, in the creation myth we have also very often twins at the beginning, two brothers. Or I think that's a very interesting point now. I think you have the same feeling. I had the feeling now it's coming perhaps over the level of the earth. It's coming into light somehow. Yeah. So coming up. And then we see one more slide, I think. And then perhaps your energy is... It was amazing. It was amazing. That absolutely, the psyche is following the process, and now we have the greening. One week. These are always 1 week. Later, I tell you when we hopped. Mm-hmm. So what you see is very simple, green, two birds, and this is a double, two doves sitting together. Two and one.
It is in the shape of a heart also. A
broken heart. It's a broken heart.
I'm wondering what's going on with the depression over the course of these 5 or 6 weeks.
Yeah, I tell you what went on in her outer look. I think I could see a change in her. I told you that she thought these first weeks were very hard for her. Hard work, difficult to stay. But she came in a more relaxed and lively way. And I felt that kind of humidity would come back to her. Blood or water, whatsoever. She looked in a livelier. She looked rounder in a way, more plasticity. Plasticity. Yes, she was more, and I don't think the depression was over at this moment. No, no, but she felt better, and she. That one thing was interesting: the heavy makeup disappeared slowly. I could see her face. More and more. Yeah?
What stands out for me is, you know, that heavy, deep depression in the first tray is now rising in the center and has green on
it. Yes, and it shows something. The broken heart is a very good remark, I think. That
the thing that stands out for me are the bridges, which kind of give the impression of hope that disconnected hearts connected.
Yes, there's a. She tries now to connect the things. It's very impressive. Now, I would like to know, how do you feel now? Would you like to stop now and go on after? Huh? You don't want to stop. So, who wants to stop? Hand up. Who wants to stay? We stay until a certain moment and then we stop.
We'll all feel it.
I tell you, when we come to the reversal of the energy, then we stop. Because then I feel tired, perhaps. Okay, let's go on. This was the next one. It is similar, but we have a little bit more of fruit of color here. This? Mm-hmm. It's a kind of phallic thing coming in. Or
you know, her, I think it was her, no, not a second, one of the third or fourth trays, she had an almost identical thing, but it was in reverse. This is the impression.
It's true, the form appears again and again of this heart. Now the next one. That's the tree of the birds. She liked this picture enormously. I think you see what it is. This form of the tree, of the growing, or sometimes it came back in a heart shape, that was typical for this period. In she was all the time, it was kind of opening also to the world, if you have it in the horizontal, like this, or growing. She moved very much with her hands, like this. Mm-hmm. Yeah?
My first impression was that we were now inside the rib cage where the heart would be.
Inside the?
Inside the ribs.
Yeah.
Where the heart would be. That was my first impression before I saw a tree.
It could be. It could very well be. I'm looking if there is a possibility for me to sit down because I feel kind of. If I sit, can you still hear me? No. Yes?
And then it's kind of like the energy is coming up.
It's coming up. It is true. Yeah?
In the house tree person evaluation, that trunk is nice and strong. The tree looks like it's celebrating.
Mm-hmm.
It just looks really positive and powerful.
It looks positive. What do you think?
This center rib that has been concerning me throughout many of its life. This is the first time I feel that it, rather than being a split, it's generous.
I wondered myself about the birds because they are so joyful and happy. And I will tell you, I found in the Hopi creation myth, they say that when the when the world became too small, they sent out birds to find another level. And again, the birds would find the new world. And I had always the impression the birds had something to do with Elsa's way of hopping around. It was her playfulness, her childlike, in a positive way, childlike way of doing also and accepting her own sound pictures. And birds are like impulses and fantasies.
Which the people climb to come out of the underworld into the upper level world where they started the world as human beings.
Yes, and I think the tree is a worldwide important archetype, archetypal image also for the center of the world. And we have the famous tree, the As Yggdrasil in the northern mythology, where the dragon is on the roots and the eagle on top. And in between is the squirrel going up and down called Ratatosk. It's an interesting image. Oh, we have it all over, I think. No, it's just a red bird, I think. That's what, is it what you mean? Over there? This? No, it's just another bird. Mm-hmm. Shall we look at the next picture? Oh, you are good. Thank you. You find everything. Thank you.
I don't want to touch this one because I have clay on my hand.
Thank you. It's wonderful. Let's touch it
before you sit down.
Thank you very much. It's now wonderful. So, that's exactly what I need. That's the next picture. And I think here it becomes everything clear, what you said. She liked this picture very much. It was like a growing flower, our heart, and we feel that something is growing, and I think growing was her feminine side very much, her trust into the feminine side, because that's what she lacked. She did not have this was growing. And by the way, when we go on now, the next picture, it's again a tree, and all these Smurfs. And you know, the Smurfs are not human beings, not yet. I think what we see here is something you can read in Neumann's The Child, the development of the child coming out of the water, and then you have the greening, the vegetative level, and then the animal level, and then the pre-conscious level, and so on. All this you can observe in this development. Let's see next one. Here we have animals. Lions and tigers. Yes, here are two kind of undefined beings, a masculine and a feminine. They are white, kind of ghost-like, or children. Also kind of pre-conscious things.
Those are lions.
Yes, I think so. And the elephants here. You have all strong animals she brings in. Yeah.
You go back to the rib cage and the heart, because this looks like lungs.
Yeah, 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 yeah. It is true. Yeah. Yep.
To me, the last several pictures, including this one, really looks like lungs. And there always seems to be something at the top, almost like a larynx. Like she's trying to speak out of that one, out of that center, you know, mm-hmm. that creative word center. So
yeah.
It all looks like lungs, and there's this, and with the birds and everything, you know, birds represent also song.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah, yeah.
And the message. You know?
Yes, the message.
And that she's trying to be to let what's in here mm-hmm. out somehow, and it's getting stronger.
It's true. Could we go back one picture? Then we, yes, I will. Look here, I think we should also have a look at the music. Here we have one with a trumpet and one with a drum. And lots of good messages. I think the music is very, very important for the development of the ego also. And the emotion inside. In many creation myths, you have first the vibration, and then the sound, and then the light is coming. And I think that's the same thing in the development of the psyche. First, if you want to say something important in public, you feel it here first. Dun, 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 dun. Then perhaps you are scared or not, and then you bring it out. Huh? I think it's a good remark. Let's go on. Now the next. Here, she said these are is a phallus and testicles. This in the center is a kind of ghost.
What did she say that was?
This is a phallus, this one. The masculine sexual organs. And she said the white people or creatures are speaking with the red ones, because these are little figures. They look at each other and they are in a dialogue. That's what she said. And we have something in the middle again, a third thing. Would be probably the result of the transcendent function or whatever. These two.
Yes.
A black and a white cat. She liked cats. She had a cat herself. She said the cat is a very feminine animal, but an independent animal. And we remember that she was not independent because she was divorced, but her husband would not let her go, and she would not go. I tell you later about this situation, because it's now very important.
What's the little white figure in the middle?
A ghost, a kind of ghost.
This is the first time we've seen one. Garden of Eden, with Adam and Eve down at the bottom, and there was the reemergence of the trout, the real schism. And I don't know what more to say about it, except that I still see the little boy figure, girl figure separated
mm-hmm.
from this one. But it's like almost after the fall or whatever, you know, there's definite sexual energy.
Mm-hmm. So we can assume that the masculine and the feminine perhaps would come together
perhaps.
One day.
There's no schism, or at least not
perhaps.
Previous, but
it could
the
be.
Ghost is very interesting.
It's perhaps the third, the unknown third.
This is Plexia kind of caduceus shape in the as well.
And?
A caduceus shape, the medical symbol.
Aha! Caduceus. Aha. This I cannot see, but perhaps you are right. It's possible. It's interesting what you say.
Mm-hmm.
Could be. Perhaps, yeah.
This is the first time we've seen water for...
Now in this second part. Of, mm-hmm.
Something new is emerging.
Let's see. Yeah?
In addition to these drawings being produced each week, is there any lengthy discussion about her present life situation?
Yes, yes, she did talk. While she was working in the sand, she did, or sometimes at the end of a picture, or in the beginning, she would tell me how she felt and what was going on. But the real discussion came later, when her husband entered the process, and I got to know him. It was he came to one of my lectures, and I tell you this in the afternoon, I think. Now, we have something interesting. She said these are two snakes going up and going down. And I must tell you, I was very surprised to see this. I thought, what's going on? And in my notes I found this, that I noted, is this a reversal of the energy? But I didn't know why and what for. Because until now we had this growing process developing, and I thought, what's going on now? I was very surprised. She was surprised. We didn't know. What do you think? Yeah?
In some ways it seems positive in the sense that the previous progression was so rapid and so wonderful, could have a too good to be true quality. To move so far, so fast, and so it seemed extremely healthy to now come back in a more reflective way into these fundamental flips and movements.
Could be, yes.
And also one of the things doesn't have a well-defined head, so there's lots of work obviously needs to be done, and two sides seem very positive as you're doing it.
Yeah, I think we will see, yeah? It's possible, yeah? I was surprised when you said this. You saw it come. You have all very good intuition also. But perhaps this is not intuition, it's knowledge. It's...
You go back to your observation earlier about two things, in this case two snakes.
Mm-hmm.
Still representing something more.
Mm-hmm. One has that more low-defined head, so it could still be like two parts of the same whole.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think we can always assume or imagine what's going on, but sometimes the opposite comes. Yeah? Yep.
They're almost like mirror images, and so...